This is WSBT's Community Update on 96.1 WSBT.
Good morning, I'm John Hoffman. Community Update this week includes a series of stories from the past week. It was a packed house Monday evening as developers of a new Menards hardware store faced an unfriendly crowd.
The major concern are property values and traffic, specifically on Gumwood Road. Menards insists it has outgrown its current store and they need to expand, but people who live in the neighborhoods surrounding the property aren't having it.
It was a packed house as developers of a new Menards hardware store faced an unfriendly crowd.
I like Menards, I shop Menards, but I just don't think it's the store to have in that area.
Menards, developers at Great Lakes Capital and Granger residents are all at odds over a proposal to move the current store at Main Street and University Park Drive to a new lot on Cleveland Road. The major complaint for many who spoke came down to increased traffic in an already heavily traveled area.
I can't imagine bringing in the semi-truck traffic, contractors' trucks, it's just going to increase the volume of traffic that we have now.
Menard said semis will also be able to enter on Cleveland Road, but said they will use the Gumwood Road entrance as well. Some say that's not good enough.
But if it is ultimately built, I think we will reroute our driving patterns. That's what we'll do.
The proposed store will be much larger than the current one. It'll have two floors as well as a lumber yard and garden center. The other point of contention is the area where the store backs up to, which is the Countryside Estates neighborhood. Joan Finnegan says she had to take her house off the market when the new store was announced.
And I got a letter saying that they're supposed to put a 14-foot wall with evergreens in front of the wall. Well, you know, that's all well and good, but what about the noise? What about the noise of them building?
The developer and a representative from Menards said they are working with the city to address some residents' concerns, but the people we spoke with didn't walk away feeling much different.
I don't see how this is going to work, so it just does not seem feasible to me. And I have not learned much different tonight so far.
And there were so many people at that meeting tonight that they had to have a second session to answer everybody's questions. A public hearing on the proposal will be held at the Mishawaka City Council meeting next Monday. Several people told me they will show up in force at that meeting as well.
WSBT 22's Max Lewis reporting. A local police department is asking for a pay increase and some other changes. St. Joseph County Police pays its employees the lowest compared to surrounding departments. Sheriff Bill Redmond says the increase in pay would help retain officers and says a lot of the officers move on to higher paying police departments. His goal is to get them to stay.
He says a lot of the officers are there for the experience and then move on to a higher paying police department. His goal is to get them to stay. And to do that, he's supporting the Fraternal Order of Police's request for a pay increase. St. Joseph County police officers are hard at work every day, tasked with similar duties as surrounding departments, yet making significantly less money.
So we've been trying to play catch up for years.
But never quite making it. That's why the Fraternal Order of Police is requesting a 4% increase for all police officers through the county council, something Sheriff Redmond supports.
People over the years leave to go to other police departments because of the pay. And that's something I certainly don't want to fall back into.
Sheriff Redmond says the number of officers continue dropping.
When I first started on the police department back in 1994, we had 126 officers. We're currently down to 117.
He's asking the council for 5 additional police officer positions. It would add roughly $250,000 to the 2020 budget.
So I know I am asking for a significant increase with those 5 additional officers, but I think it's extremely crucial that we increase our manpower.
The county council has until November 1st to pass the budget.
It's a long, very tedious process.
But members are deliberating early.
To say that we will consider each request, including the request from the FOP, is a definite yes.
A project is also in the works to move the current police station to the old county highway garage behind the airport. Right now, the divisions are in separate buildings, but the new facility would bring them to one central location.
We're just waiting to see what's next.
The request to renovate the central garage would cost roughly around $2.6 million. All of the proposals are part of the county's budget process. Now, again, the deadline to pass the county's budget is at the beginning of November.
That's WSBT 22's Lauren Becker reporting. The investigation into the cause of the fire at Fun FX warehouse at Sample and Chapin in South Bend could take months. Investigators say there's a chance we may never know what started it.
There's no salvaging this building. In fact, investigators say it's not even safe to go inside. Now, if you look up here at the second floor, that's where they believe the fire started. But they say that due to the roof collapsing across the top of the building, it's going to be very hard to figure out the origin of this fire.
It's one of the largest fires in recent memory in South Bend, and it might be impossible to determine a cause.
I don't want to risk a life for nothing.
Fire investigators walking around the building this morning to start their investigation.
We're very hesitant of sending anybody in the inside until we are absolutely sure that they can go in there.
Fire Marshal Chico Rodriguez says the roof has collapsed right where they think the fire may have started, and that they'll have to use eyewitness accounts to help determine the cause.
So I'm just walking casually over to the door to see what's going on or if I can help, and I see smoke, and next thing I know, by the time I found them, which couldn't have been a few seconds later, the first floor is half full of smoke.
Victor Kao owns Fun FX and is hoping he's still able to get his computer out of the building. More than half of his business's income is made over the Halloween season.
Because we had just gotten a lot of new merchandise and getting ready to open our temporary store, so I still don't even know for sure, and all my computer equipment is inside there, so hopefully I can recover the hard drive and we'll find out.
But Rodriguez says it's possible the building may never be cleared again for entry, and that he's just hoping if fire investigators do make it in, that they don't find any bodies they weren't expecting.
We do have a lot of homeless and a lot of vagrants, people that come out here. Was anybody in there? We cannot 100% sure say yet, only because we don't know.
Now, at the time of the fire, we know that there were three people inside of the building, and all three of those people made it out alive. But investigators are hoping that if they do get to comb through the building, that they don't find any surprises.
That's WSBT 22's Brooke O'Daniel reporting. Now, a look at South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg's ongoing presidential campaign. It was a big week as he participated in the second round of candidate debates in Detroit. We begin with some of his talk with CNN's Chris Cuomo the day before his Tuesday evening debate appearance.
I'm not scared of this president. I mean, this is a guy who was working on season 7 of Celebrity Apprentice when I was driving armored vehicles outside the wire in Afghanistan. I'm not afraid to take him on. The question is, how do we take him on in a way that doesn't just empower him? You know, the gift of this president is to take any energy that goes his way, even if it's in the form of criticism, and turn it into a kind of food that he just grows off of and gets bigger. That's the code that we've got to crack. And I think the way to do it is to name and confront everything that he does wrong, but then immediately go back to talking about the impact that we will have on voters' lives. If we're talking about him, that means we're not talking about you. If we're talking about your everyday life, that's what gives different voters a stake in this election, and also, by the way, unifies voters who have been divided by this White House's masterful practice of white identity politics.
But this is how we won. And, you know, the trick of it is, you know, you have political correctness and then you have perfect candor, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's what he's playing to, which is this talk of his. It's not that his supporters are deplorable. You've been traveling this country. You know the disaffection is real. You know the pain is real and that there are a lot of white Americans who feel forgotten by what others celebrate as diversity and multiculturalism. They see him as a proxy, a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant proxy.
Yeah, but he's playing them for suckers. I mean, he's the message that he's telling to these Americans is, you're not making enough money. Yeah, your houses or housing is becoming unaffordable. College education is out of reach for your kids, and your job may be automated away in 10 years. But your big problem in life is political correctness. That's what he's trying to get people to believe. And sure, a lot of people voted this way last time around because they had been so let down by people on both sides of the political spectrum that they decided to just vote to burn the house down because they felt disaffected or because they didn't like our nominee. And this isn't to excuse the racism or the misogyny or the xenophobia in that campaign. But we should look at why those things found more fertile ground than usual without excusing it. And I think what we've got to now say to these voters is, okay, you voted to burn the house down. Now the house is on fire. But he has not done one thing to make your life better. And if you think your problem is brown people, when your job is about to get automated away and you don't have the retirement savings you need in order to actually have a dignified remainder of your life, then you're not going to make
it. You'll say I gave you the best economy ever and I'm finally speaking the truth.
Yeah. the best economy ever. I mean, under Obama, unemployment goes, what, from 10 to 5? Trump sees it go from 5 to 4, and he thinks he's the one who, it's like the rooster in the morning, thinks he made the sun come up. Meanwhile, there's the very simple fact that while GDP is going up, life expectancy is going down. So, yeah, the Dow's up, there's some nice economic numbers, fantastic. 90% of Americans have not seen their incomes budge more than the slightest amount the entire time that I have been alive. This president, I mean, this is a problem that goes back before this president, but he has done nothing. Look, he and his ally, Mitch McConnell in the Senate, are killing the minimum wage bill that was passed out of the House. They're killing every serious effort that has come about.
They say the minimum wage winds up actually reducing wage rolls because people are going to lose their jobs to make up for the mandate.
Yeah, they say that as if it's a theoretical question, as if we didn't have decades worth of data showing that that's not true. This is what we're learning in this moment, is that Reagan conservatism, economically, is just like communism. Sounds good in theory, but we tried it and it failed in practice. Mm.
Tomorrow night, there's a good chance you're going to have to show you can take a punch. We've heard that Beto O'Rourke and there's some others now see you as a target. You know, in this recent polling, it's very interesting to see how Biden recovered since that last set of numbers after the first debate. You are in that same place, 5 to 7%. You got there quickly and surprisingly to people. You've stayed there. Now you're a target. How are you going to take a punch tomorrow night? Someone comes at you and starts talking about your age and inexperience. That's the first one. How do you take that punch?
Look, I'm going to talk about why I'm the best person to be the nominee and to be the president. And folks can poke holes. It's what they do. That's part of what a debate is for. I welcome it. You know, this is an opportunity for many Americans, many of whom, by the way, have not been following the blow-by-blow of the process the way folks like you and I have, to take our measure, to see what we're made of, and what they're going to see is a different message and a different kind of messenger. I'm just not like the others, and I think that's going to come across tomorrow night.
Do you have vulnerability digging into your past employment for Baker McKenzie, what you were doing over there for them, the contractor?
No, I did good work. I never worked on anything I didn't believe in my private sector career. I also figured out pretty quickly that my heart was in public service, and after 2 or 3 years in business, I decided to commit myself to public service. It was definitely a pay cut. It was definitely a life change, but it's a good one. And my military service and my public service has really shaped me, and it shapes the heart that I bring to this presidential campaign.
Because I always say to people when they come on the show in your position, one, I rarely get to say this, but thank you for your service to the country. And two, I wish you good luck.
Thank you.
Everybody's got to agree that we need better in terms of our dialogue and our relationship with politics and the people than we're getting right now.
Now's
so
our
good
chance.
Luck to you tomorrow night.
Thank you.
In the debate, Buttigieg answered a question about retraining workers losing jobs to the global economy.
What is your plan for retraining workers whose jobs are at risk?
Well, this happened in my community 20 years before I was born, and when I was growing up, we were still picking up the pieces. Empty factories, empty houses, poverty. I know exactly what happens to a community when these closures take place, and there will be more. It's why we actually need to put the interests of workers first. Of course we need to do retraining. We're doing it now in South Bend. We should continue to do it. But this is so much bigger than a trade fight. This is about a moment when the economy is changing before our eyes. There are people in the gig economy who go through more jobs in a week than my parents went through in their lifetime. It's why I've proposed that we allow gig workers to unionize, because a gig is a job and a worker is a worker.
Thank you, Mayor.
We have to respond to all of these changes and, you know, in addition to confronting tech, in addition to supporting workers by doubling unionization, as I propose to do, some of this is low tech, too. Like, the minimum wage is just too low. And so-called conservative Christian senators right now in the Senate are blocking a bill to raise the minimum wage when Scripture says that whoever oppresses the poor taunts their maker.
Buttigieg also had some thoughts on the racial division so prominent now in America.
One of his first statements was an admission of failure, just like in the first debate, when he said he failed at diversifying the South Bend police force. This time, he took ownership for racism, crime, and poverty not ending in South Bend. But he then went on to talk about what has been accomplished, including investing in a historically underrepresented African-American neighborhood. And he says the city's residents have repeatedly come together to tackle challenges. He also brought up the police-involved shooting of Eric Logan on June 16th.
Right now, in the wake of a police-involved shooting, our community is moving from hurting to healing by making sure that the community can participate in things like revising the use of force policy and making sure there are community voices on the Board of Safety that handles police matters.
Buttigieg continued that answer, bringing up his Douglas Plan, which is named after Frederick Douglass, and which sets the goal of ending systemic racism across the country.
WSBT 22's Tolly Taylor reporting.
The views expressed on WSBT's Community Update are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, WSBT Radio, its staff, or management. Join us again next week on Community Update on The Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT.